Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, we open our show with a warning from county health officials on new COVID-19 variants that have caused hospitalizations and ICUs to jump by two-thirds in the last month, and what precautions you should be taking. Then, we'll be interviewing two longtime women's rights champions, Bonnie Price and Bella Barna. They'll be sharing their experiences before and after Roe v. Wade legalized abortion, helping women to access abortion care. And they'll discuss how the Supreme Court's recent decision to overturn Roe v. Wade will impact vulnerable women. Then on Green Scene, learn about a brand new county program called Experience the Outdoors. It's aimed at getting people into county parks and even providing free equipment for first-time outdoor enthusiasts. Another death of a prisoner in a San Diego County jail facility has occurred. This time, a 40-year-old woman at the Las Colinas Detention Center in Santee, and we'll have details. On Tribal Beat, Jamul Indian Village Chairwoman Erica Pinto has been appointed to serve on the U.S. Department of the Interior Secretary's Tribal Advisory Committee, working to improve relations between the federal department and Native American tribes. From Public News Service, we'll also have some top national news stories today, including the former White House counsel Pat Cipollone meeting with the January 6th Commission, an investigation into audits that the Trump administration ordered of FBI officials, congressional efforts to have gun manufacturer CEOs testify in a hearing on gun violence, and President Biden's Medal of Freedom recipients. Community healthcare clinic advocates are speaking out against efforts by drug companies to eliminate a low-cost drug program, and we'll have details. With the weather heating up, find out how to locate cool zones locally where you can beat the heat. And finally, we'll be re-airing one of our Best of East County episodes today, taking you on the road to the Desert View Tower in Hakumba Hot Springs, one of our region's most iconic roadside attractions on the border between San Diego and Imperial Counties. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters. This is Miriam Raftery with a health report. Hospitalizations for COVID-19-related illnesses are on the rise locally, up 66% in the last 30 days, the San Diego County Health and Human Services Agency reports. New ICU admissions rose 68%, more than two-thirds, during that same time frame. The county has also seen an increase in reinfections. San Diegans who have tested positive for COVID-19 several times throughout the pandemic. National data shows that prior infection does not necessarily prevent reinfection with some of these newer virus variants. Dr. Cameron Kaiser, the county's deputy public health officer, offers this advice. Due to the increased level of community transmission, including reinfections, we strongly recommend masking, especially in crowded spaces or around family, friends, and colleagues who may be more vulnerable to COVID-19, Dr. Kaiser advises. Our best bet in preventing hospitalizations and deaths is to stay up to date with COVID-19 vaccinations and boosters and isolating from others when sick. Vaccinations are available now to everybody 6 months of age and older. Boosters are available for anybody age 5 and up. Those 50 and older and those who are moderately or severely immune compromised are encouraged to get a second booster 4 months after the initial one if you haven't already done so. A variety of treatment options are now available to San Diegans who do test positive for COVID. Treatment is recommended for high-risk individuals because it can prevent illness from progressing to the point where you may need hospital services. Timely treatments also lower the risk of dying from COVID. Oral medications in the form of pills and monoclonal antibodies in the form of intravenous infusion are available at many locations and community pharmacies across San Diego. Antiviral pills should be started within 5 days of developing symptoms of COVID, however. Monoclonal antibodies should be given no more than 7 days after the onset of symptoms. To determine which treatment is best for you, talk to your doctor or healthcare provider, or you can call 211 to find a provider.
We'll be right back.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today, my very special guests are Bonnie Price and Bella Barna, two longtime women's rights advocates with firsthand experiences helping women seeking abortion, working in clinics that provided healthcare services to women, including abortions. We are here to talk about the impacts of the Supreme Court's decision overturning Roe versus Wade. My guests' experiences run the gamut from helping women before abortion was legal in some places, as well as after the landmark Roe versus Wade decision. And one of our guests also has personal experiences with a history and a family history of abortions. So we'll also be talking about the physical and the psychological impacts on women in many states where abortion is, once again, illegal. Bonnie and Bella, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Miriam.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to join us on this very important topic. Can each of you please start by telling us a little bit about where you worked in this field, you know, the positions you've held and when that was? Bonnie, let's start with you.
Oh, my goodness. I'm as old as dirt. So my history with this is pre-Roe, and I was a professor in college, and so I had students who needed safe legal abortions, and they lived in Pennsylvania. I lived in Pennsylvania at the time. So we had a very, very contorted process and expensive to get safe legal abortions before Roe v. Wade.
Roe said that there was an abortion right that was legal nationwide, but some states did have legal abortion before that, with various restrictions, and in others, it was completely illegal. So what was the situation in Pennsylvania back then?
Well, the Pennsylvania situation was, if you wanted a safe legal abortion, you had to go to a hospital that allowed it and had two MDs and one psychiatrist who would sign a document that the woman who had the unwanted pregnancy would suffer irreparable mental or life-threatening issues. And that cost $800.
It's a lot of money back.
It was in the late 60s and early 70s before Roe. College students found that money to be extremely prohibitive.
And so
many used backroom butchers, we called them, untrained people to do their abortions.
Awful. And did you actually interact or work in the clinics themselves, Bonnie, or you helped simply as a professor helped people to access these abortion services?
I did not work in the clinics. I later, after Roe, became a member of the Planned Parenthood board, but when I was...
Right, I knew you were involved in Planned Parenthood at one point. So.
Late 60s and early 70s, I was a college professor, and you know, I had women in my classes who needed help. So I helped them.
Yeah. But you also helped a doctor, you told us, who had gone into hiding. Why did he have to run for his life? And how, you know, what kind of threats were people facing back then who helped women?
The degree of hostility faced by people who worked in the field, even after Roe v. Wade, which is when our local Planned Parenthood had to give shelter to a young male doctor who was running for his life. We had to hold him in a secret place so he wouldn't get killed because of the anger of people who were against abortion.
And I call you back. Understand,
Pennsylvania was a very Catholic state. And so most of the opponents that we had were from the Catholic faith. and they were trying to enforce their religious beliefs on those who did not subscribe to those beliefs. But the young doctor, I talked to him and I said, why are you doing this? And he said, you know, somebody has to do it. And I want to make sure women have the proper care.
Wow. Shocking to think we're going back to those days again in some states. Bella, you've worked in both Kaiser and Planned Parenthood, I understand. Can you tell us when and where that was and whether abortion was legal where you were?
Yeah, I graduated from nursing school in 1984. Mm-hmm. And I worked for Kaiser for a number of years in the operating room. Mm-hmm. So part of the operating room in LA, they had a clinic where they did abortions as well. So as part of a rotation, I would go through that area and help with abortion care.
Mm-hmm. So this was after Roe, when abortion was legal and
correct.
And, you know, a safer situation for many.
Yeah, it was a much safer situation. Absolutely. I myself had an abortion in 1970, where my mother actually took me to New York State. She had friends there, and I received an abortion in a hospital in New York.
Okay, so you were in a state, I take it, where it was not legal and you had to travel out of state.
Yeah, we lived in Florida, so we traveled to New York.
So you had a mother, you know, who was willing to, and able to help you travel to do this. How concerned are you about what will happen now to, you know, teenagers, young women, whose either their parents won't help them or they're afraid to tell the parents for some reason, let alone situations where it might be incest?
Oh, absolutely. I can't imagine the amount of sadness I have for all these young women who have no options.
Yeah.
It's absolutely horrible.
Can you share? I think, you know, there's a lot of misperceptions sometimes about why women seek abortions, but are you willing to share a little bit about your experience? What made you decide that abortion was your best choice?
Sure. I was 19, and my mother, it was something that was without saying. You know, we knew that I wasn't capable at that point in my life of raising a child. And my mother was European. She went through the Holocaust. Mm. And when she was in Europe, she had an abortion as well. So even though we had a fraught relationship, she really stepped up and took care of me at that point in my life.
And I mean, just to show how dramatically different experiences can be, on your own Facebook post, when you wrote about your experience, there was a woman who posted that she was in a very similar situation, 18 years old. Her mother tried to use a wire to induce abortion in her. And then when that failed, the father took her to some stranger who took her to a motel room where there was someone who supposedly was a doctor who finally completed the abortion. But I can't imagine anyone wanting their child to go through something like that.
No, that's horrible. There were a couple of doctors who, in Miami, which is where I grew up, who gave a form of an abortion pill. Mm-hmm. I think it was oxytocin, which causes the uterine to cramp in hopes that it'll expel the embryo, you know.
Yeah. I mean, pre-Roe, there are abortion pills and morning after pills, but they may not be available to women in many of these states.
And what really worries me about that is the abortion pill can work, but if a woman has any complications, the fear that she would have in going to seek medical care is amazing. You know, what is she going to do if there, you know, if it didn't complete or something, you know, she'd be in fear of arrest if she went to a physician to complete it.
Well, absolutely. And the doctor himself could be arrested for helping her.
Exactly.
Bella, you've spoken of the desperation of women facing abortions and concern about their mental health, and now the added stress, not only right. of making a decision of whether or not to have an abortion, it can be stressful either way, I'm sure. Now the stress of becoming a fugitive, crossing a state line, maybe doing self-induced things. I mean, Bonnie, I'd like you to weigh on this too. I mean, both of you, how concerned are you about this, and what, if anything, can be done to help these women?
Well, there was a case that just happened this past week in Ohio where a 10-year-old girl right. was impregnated through incest, and Ohio said, no, you can't get an abortion. Fortunately, she had an option to go to Illinois and have the procedure. But, you know, at that age, it could kill a child.
Absolutely.
Full term. And those who make public policy have no idea that they're actually causing the deaths of those who are alive by the ruling they have made.
Yeah, as a journalist, I have interviewed women who were victims in situations like that, and those who cared for them. And I know one really stands out in my mind. A couple of them. One of a little girl who was forced to have a cesarean section, or she would have died giving birth after she sought an abortion and couldn't get one. She was only 11 years old.
Oh gosh!
And another where there was a very young girl, you know, 10 or 11. Who had been raped by her father. In her court, in her state, abortion was generally not legal, but you could petition a court for permission, you know, as a minor in situations like this. And the court refused to grant permission because daddy was a sheriff and no judge wanted to go up against daddy who was a sheriff. I mean, it was just heartbreaking to hear the stories. But let's talk about women whose lives can be at risk. You know, when I mention this to people who say they are pro-life, I ask, well, what about the lives of women? Why would you not support at least an exception to save the life of a woman if you say you're pro-life? Shouldn't her life count? And their answer is always, oh, but that's so rare. Like, doesn't it matter if it happens to you or someone you love? But right. I would like to hear about any experiences that you may have had with women who may have found themselves in a potentially life-threatening or health-threatening, mm-hmm. either one, situations where, you know, abortion was needed specifically for that reason.
Hmm.
If you knew of any.
I don't know specifically, but, you know, the life-threatening issue is probably related to an ectopic pregnancy.
Well, that's that is one condition. I actually had a friend who had that happen to her. She literally passed out at work where we worked together, doubled over with pain, and was told that, you know, if the tube bursts, what an ectopic pregnancy is
one
implants in the fallopian tube. It cannot grow. There's no room for the baby to grow. Right. So the baby is doomed no matter what, but you can save the mother if you terminate the pregnancy.
Exactly.
I was actually diagnosed with one myself.
It's not that uncommon.
God mine turned out to be a misdiagnosis. Fortunately, it was a wanted pregnancy, but I would have had to go through with a pregnancy termination if it wasn't. I had another child at home, you know. But what I learned is that one in every 50 to 100 pregnancies in the United States is ectopic, is tubal. So that alone is one in every 50 to 100 pregnancies. But there are others. I had another friend who had preeclampsia, which is very, very, you know, dangerously high blood mm-hmm. pressure. Another where she developed, you know, gestational diabetes. She chose to go through with the pregnancy and the baby died the day it was born. But she survived. But, you know, these are choices that, the government be making these choices, or should families and their doctors, you know, women in consultation with their family members and their doctors be the ones to be making such heart-wrenching, you know, choices. But anyway, the other thing that a lot of people aren't aware of is that an abortion ban can even put at risk somebody who wasn't seeking an abortion, who had a wanted pregnancy, but who winds up with a miscarriage that's incomplete. Mm-hmm. Debbie Reynolds, the actress Debbie Reynolds, has written about her. She had a baby that died during the third trimester, but the law back then required that you had to carry that pregnancy to term. And she said this caused toxins that affected her health, you know, for a full year. She did survive, but some women have died of that when sepsis sets in. If the baby dies and they can't, and the fetus doesn't expel, they have to go in and remove it. But now that's actually illegal to do in some of these states. Did you ever encounter women in those kinds of situations?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I had what they called a missed abortion, where I miscarried, or again, the fetus didn't survive, but I had to carry it for a certain length of time because medically it was not safe for a certain, the uterus is too soft to do a simple DNC.
Oh my goodness.
So,
how terribly traumatic.
I had a friend who had a domestic situation that was untenable, and her husband beat her, and he was an alcoholic. She already had one child with fetal alcohol syndrome, and she got pregnant again, and she was a good Catholic. And I said, look, you can get an abortion, because by that time it was legal. Mm-hmm. And she went to her doctor, and he arranged for her to get an abortion at another hospital, because that was a Catholic hospital. So she went to the general hospital, had the abortion, and was greatly relieved and about not bringing another child into the world with fetal alcohol syndrome.
Yeah, I've heard counselors, you know, marriage and family counselors voice grave concern about women who are in domestic abuse situations, that this might make it harder to leave an abuser if someone is pregnant. There's just so many things. In some states, rapists have rights to children. Can you imagine being raped and having to give birth to the baby and then give the father the rapist visitation rights? You know, it's so anti.
There's an added danger. Women where the guns are in the house who get pregnant and their male partner does not like it are more likely to kill them.
I just finished reading a book that was set during the San Diego Jazz Age. It was about a real life murder, and that was exactly the situation. Without giving the plot away too much, it was a young woman who was several months pregnant, found, you know, dead on the beach, and at the time, apparently, you know, the police stated that murder of pregnant women was very common. If the man did not want another child, sometimes it might have been an illicit affair, and you know, he didn't want the wife to find out or something, and so they would simply kill the woman. So you're right, there's all these ramifications that really haven't been thought through by some of these people who call this pro-life. California has a ballot initiative coming up. Abortion, of course, is currently legal in California, but there's always a fear that that could change someday if the legislature were to become more conservative. There is a ballot initiative coming up that would make abortion access a constitutional right in California. But how fearful are you about even a liberal state like California or New York losing abortion access? Because if Republicans are saying that if they take back Congress and they take back,
they're going to make it federal.
They take back the presidency and Congress, they want to pass a federal law that would make abortion, you know, a crime everywhere in the nation, perhaps with no exceptions at all. We don't know the details on that, but certainly in most cases, to make it abortion nationwide. How concerned are you about that, and what can or should people do if they share that concern?
Well, of course, I'm a political scientist, and I always think first of taking political action. And with the Supreme Court the way it is, and the potential for changes that Miriam just mentioned, there is a very high risk of a national abortion elimination rule. And that would just be untenable. Our neighbor to the north, Canada, and to the south, Mexico, have both expressed their understanding of what a terrible situation it is just for states. But
so it might be a situation of having to travel not only across state lines, but out of the country. And how many people have a passport handy? A lot of people don't even have a passport, especially teenagers, which in the old days, that wasn't needed. A lot of women did go to Mexico, or teenagers, you know, for illegal abortions back in the day. But that won't even be an option now for women who don't have passports, which can take many months to get when you apply for them.
Oh, and medically, you know, having an abortion the first trimester is a much different procedure than a second trimester abortion, which is honestly traumatic to everybody. It's traumatic to the physicians who perform them as much as it is to the woman.
I can
imagine.
And if one is concerned about whether a fetus could, you know, feel pain or something, obviously doing this in the very early stages.
The guilt and all those horrible feelings.
It isn't only abortion that's on the line. Justice Clarence Thomas, in his concurring opinion, stated that he does not believe there's a right to privacy in the Constitution. That's what throwing this out was based on. And further, that he would like to see the court reconsider landmark decisions that legalized gay marriage, that legalized gay rights, so that homosexuality was no longer criminalized, and unbelievably, that legalized birth control between married couples, not even single folks, but married couples. Could you comment on that?
Oh, it's absolutely insane. You know, here they are talking about abortion on one hand and then taking away the ability to stop unwanted pregnancies in the other. It's insane.
Yeah, it seems illogical.
When you think of privacy, which is the basis of the Roe decision, and the Supreme Court saying, well, you don't really have a privacy right because it's not written in the Constitution, that ignores Amendment 9 and 10 of the Constitution that say, you know, there are rights that are not written that exist, and also states have rights. That's 10. Mm-hmm. 9 gives you the privacy right as an unnamed part of the U.S. Constitution that is recognized. We have privacy rights online. We have privacy rights for healthcare records. We have privacy rights going into other areas. And so if
we have medical privacy. I mean, you know, HIPAA is all about
HIPAA,
that. So Congress could certainly legislate this if they choose to, just as the Republicans are trying to pass a federal law to outlaw abortion. We should note that Democrats in the House did pass a bill that would protect reproductive rights for contraceptives and birth control. However, it has not been able to get through the Senate because not a single Republican will vote for it. And they have, you know, the filibuster power. It would take 60 votes. There's only 50 Democrats. And even if all of them vote yes, there are not enough to get that passed right now. So it's a very tenuous situation back there. What else would each of you who have so much experience in this like our audience to know today? And are there any myths about abortion or reproductive services that you would like to dispel today?
I think the main one, I worked at Planned Parenthood and worked at Kaiser in primary care, I also worked in psychiatry. And to me, that's the main issue in terms of a woman seeking abortion, is that their psychiatric health care needs to also be addressed. They need, you know, a woman needs support, a woman needs love, but yeah, even still, very often she needs counseling. Exactly. And, you know, when mental health counselors are being put on the line because, you know, if a woman discloses that she had an abortion, that they somehow would have to report that or something. It's, you know, it goes back to 15th century. It just isn't okay.
Yeah, unreal. Bonnie, how about you?
Well, the whole situation is fraught with ignorance, in my opinion. And mm-hmm. People in the United States nationally have a great level of ignorance.
Yeah,
some churches, religious organizations are very strongly blaming women for everything.
Right.
So we have a big problem with the patriarchy.
Yeah. And this has gone on since Eve, I guess, if you believe in the Adam and Eve's creation story in the Bible, that women have been blamed for all of the evils in the world, it seems.
And this is an example of what's happened. You know, when you read the decision by the Supreme Court on reversing Roe, the opinion goes back to a time when witchcraft was recognized.
Right. Yeah, they cited an expert from like 12th century or something like that, back when. Who believed in burning witches at the stake, you know?
The poorly written decision is an example of ignorance. You know, it's just intolerable, in my opinion, to have people on the Supreme Court who know so little and who are supposed to be adjudicating based on law. They're not.
One of them was accused of rape himself, and another one was accused of sexual harassment. Here they are making decisions about women's reproductive freedoms.
Our Vice President Kamala Harris said she never believed them when they went before the Senate committee for confirmation. And I agree with her. As a matter of fact, I favor impeachment for all six of the justices, because they all said to the Senate committee that they saw Roe v. Wade as a precedent.
Yeah, I know at least four of them did. I'm not sure about the other two from long ago, but certainly the four most recent ones definitely stated that Roe was settled law and should be respected. And so essentially, it sounds like they perjured themselves before Congress, which is actually a crime. Again, the problem comes back, though, to impeach. You have to have enough members of Congress willing to do it.
Right.
And are there any Republicans that would be willing to impeach a Trump-appointed or a Republican-appointed conservative justice? And so it all seems to come back to the balance of power. I mean, not to say you couldn't have, you know, pro-choice people in both parties, but right now it seems to be 100% of the Republicans in Congress. They are all anti-choice when it comes to abortion. We should note that one of them is a representative right here in East County of San Diego's California's two senators, both are pro-choice. Of California's five congressional representatives, four of them are pro-choice. The other one, Daryl Issa, is not. In fact, he went so far as to praise this decision. And before it happened, he signed an amicus brief to the Supreme Court. An amicus brief.
So sorry.
That's okay. Daryl Issa signed an amicus brief to the Supreme Court asking that Roe versus Wade be overturned. And he praised this decision. So he clearly didn't think there should be any exceptions, at least none that he's spoken of. So people should be aware of that when they go to the voting booth and they make their decision about who to support in the upcoming congressional elections. His opponent, by the way, Mr. Houlihan, Stephen Houlihan, is a nurse and who is pro-choice. So there are choices for people, at least in the ballot booth, if not in the
community.
Yeah, if not in some states when they go to see the doctor. I'm going to let each of you have the final word today on this. What else would you like our audience out there to know that I may not have asked today? Bonnie?
Well, I think the most important thing for people to do is to follow up, learn who supports women, and support candidates for election to official positions who support women as a matter of record on their records on where they stand on women's right to get an abortion and to control her own body. As our vice president said, name one law that the government makes to control a man's body. There aren't any.
Nope.
And so women are relegated to the position of being without control over their own body, which is legally is called loss of agency. And we need to have that restored. And the passing of the Equal Rights Amendment might be a good thing. It's already gotten all the votes, but it's not been recognized.
Yeah, one state came in late after the deadline, so it's been a question of whether or not maybe the process needs to be started over again, and perhaps with something explicit in there on including reproductive freedoms for access to things like birth control and abortion. It should be noted that poll after poll after poll through the years have all showed the majority, sometimes two-thirds majority, support access to abortion. And I'm sure if you asked about birth control, it would probably be even higher. But, you know, the vast majority of people support access to it, even if they aren't completely comfortable with abortion. They still think women ultimately should have the right to make that choice, especially in the early stages, especially when women's lives or health are at stake, or with these very young girls. Another thing we haven't talked about is women who may have a fetus where something is terribly wrong, which can only be determined in the middle trimester, typically.
Exactly.
Yeah, things like spina bifida or brain, a baby with no brain, you know, these kind of things that can happen. Bella, what about you? What else would you like to say on this issue today?
I think I'm again most concerned about women's mental health when it comes to their reproductive rights and the ability, you know, when you look around the world and you see how backwards we are, you know, this talk about exceptionalism. Well, we're exceptionally stupid when it comes to this particular issue in our country. And like you said, you know, the majority of people really support, and they probably mostly had some experience in the arena, you know, whether it's their personal experience or their child's experience or a friend's experience.
Right.
So I really think that, you know, putting that extra pressure on women's mental health is a terrible thing. And there are no services that really help support that.
Yeah, very, very good point, Bella. Well, I want to thank both of you for joining us today. Folks, if you tuned in late, we've been speaking with Bonnie Burns Price and Bella Barna, two longtime women's rights activists who have been active in helping women get abortions, or in Bella's case, you know, has had abortions herself, for speaking out, taking the time to speak out on this very important issue, share your experiences, and joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you very much, Miriam.
Thank you.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea. Public interest news for our region.
Our independent radio station, KNSJ, was launched on the 4th of July, back in 2013. Since then, KNSJ has added new local and syndicated programs. Now, we're working to build our news and investigative journalism team to bring you the many important stories you won't hear anywhere else. Stories that impact you, your family, your community, and our nation. Independent, nonprofit, nonpartisan media has never been more important than today, when our very democracy is at risk. When our democracy is at risk. Please donate to support KNSJ News at www.knsj.org. That's www.knsj.org. Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
San Diego County has kicked off its new Experience the Outdoors program. It will feature up to 75 free events starting this summer over the next year to increase public awareness of county regional parks and highlight activities and services available to everyone. The program aims to teach people about the outdoors, share fun, as well as promote equity, inclusion, accessibility, and opportunity. The program is built around three separate parks campaigns: the RAD Regional Parks Event Series, the Ride On Mountain Biking Challenge, and the Parks 101 First Timer Series. The RAD Regional Parks Event Series will include dozens of events at 12 different county parks, including summer movies in the park, hikes, fitness classes, ghost tours, and historic tours, bird and raptor presentations, celebrations, festivals, and family fun days. The Ride On Mountain Biking Challenge will include 8 monthly meetup events that will let riders take on 8 beginner, intermediate, and advanced trails at 6 different parks. Participants can earn custom Ride On socks and a collectible sticker. The program was developed by County Parks with the San Diego Mountain Biking Association and support of REI San Diego, the San Diego County Park Society, and other organizations. The Parks 101 First Timer Series is starting with 13 scheduled events that will teach participants outdoor essentials under the direction of county staff, including things like how to hike and bike safely, how to camp, fish, kayak, and even rock climb. The program is designed specifically for people who are beginners to outdoor experiences. Some of the promotions for the events will include waiving county day use fees and camping fees, translation services, and even providing participants with free equipment to use for events that require specialized equipment. For more information about our county's new Experience the Outdoors program, you can visit sdparks.org/experienceoutdoors. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Another prisoner has died while in custody in a San Diego County detention facility, this time a Santee inmate. 40-year-old Erica Wahlberg was arrested for an outstanding drug warrant on June 27th. She was taken to the Vista Detention Facility and then transferred to Las Colinas in Santee. Early the next day, she showed signs of medical distress and was sent to a hospital for treatment, where she died on July 2nd. Wahlberg's is the latest in a long string of jail deaths. A state audit found 185 deaths of people in custody here in San Diego County from 2006 through 2020, the most of any major California county. Another 18 died last year, setting an all-time record, and 10 more so far this year. A state audit recommended numerous reforms as well as legislative action. The Sheriff's Department has indicated it has implemented some of those reforms, and a bill pending by Assemblywoman Akilah Weber would mandate more reforms. But they didn't come in time to save the life of Erica Wahlberg. Lieutenant Chris Steffen says every death is a tragedy, and the San Diego County Sheriff's Department is sympathetic to Ms. Wahlberg's family and loved ones. He added that a sheriff's family liaison officer has been assigned. The sheriff's homicide unit responded to investigate the incident, as is customary for all in-custody deaths, and an autopsy is pending. The Citizens Law Enforcement Review Board, per a new procedure, was also notified of the death. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is the East County Magazine Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Elijah McKee with East County Magazine's Tribal Beat. Erica Pinto, chairwoman of Hamul Indian Village, has been appointed by Department of the Interior Secretary Deb Holland to serve on the department's newly formed Secretary's Tribal Advisory Committee. The Secretary's Tribal Advisory Committee, announced last November at the White House Tribal Nations Summit, was created to ensure that tribal leaders have direct communication with federal officials. Members will exchange views, share information, and provide advice and recommendations regarding Department of the Interior programs, policies, and funding that affect tribal nations. The committee will also work to improve government-to-government relations between the department and tribes. The committee is composed of a primary tribal representative from each of the 12 Bureau of Indian Affairs regions, as well as one alternate from each region. Secretary of the Interior Deb Holland states, tribal members who are joining the first-ever Secretary's Tribal Advisory Committee will be integral to ensuring tribal leaders can engage at the highest levels of the department on issues that matter most to their people. I look forward to continued engagement and ensuring that the department honors and strengthens our nation-to-nation relationships with tribes. Chairwoman Pinto says she is honored to be chosen to serve as a guiding voice on the Secretary's Tribal Advisory Committee, adding, representing my people on this scale and helping to shape policies that affect all tribes across the U.S. will truly be one of the highlights of my life. She has previously been honored with numerous awards for her leadership and influence, including the American Indian Chamber of Commerce of California's highest honor, the Warrior Award. And she is a nationally sought-after speaker and leader regarding tribal and gaming matters. Chairwoman Pinto has been involved with the Hamul Indian Tribal Council since 1997. In 2015, she was the first woman elected chairwoman and has led the tribe to make significant economic progress on its path to self-reliance, including opening a casino on the tribe's reservation in 2016, creating nearly 1,000 permanent jobs. She is also co-founder of the Acorns to Oaks Tribal Program, which organizes activities designed to help prevent drug and alcohol abuse and teen pregnancy, as well as promote education. In addition, Chairwoman Pinto serves on the board of the Southern California Tribal Chairmen's Association and as chair of the board of directors for the Southern Indian Health Council. She also chairs the Health and Safety Task Force for the Tribal Government Casino and Gaming Commission, which was created at the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic. She is a Transportation Committee Advisory Board member and co-chair of the Interagency Technical Working Group on Tribal Transportation Issues with the San Diego Association of Governments, as well as an advisory board member for the Native American Advisory Committee. She also serves on the San Diego International Film Festival Native American Advisory Board. Now, as the primary member of the Bureau of Indian Affairs Pacific Region on the Secretary's Tribal Advisory Committee to the Federal Department of the Interior, Chairwoman Pinto will represent more than 100 federally recognized tribes throughout California.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea. Public interest news for our region.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times. The January 6th committee hears today from a highly sought-after witness.
It's a partisan impeachment that they've delivered to your doorstep in an election year.
Former White House counsel Pat Cipollone, who defended former President Donald Trump during his 2020 impeachment trial, sits down for a closed-door transcribed interview by the committee. Cipollone was at the heart of last week's testimony from White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson, who said Cipollone was concerned Trump could face criminal charges if he joined protesters at the Capitol.
Mr. Cipollone said something to the effect of, please make sure we don't go up to the Capitol, Cassidy. In the days leading up to the 6th, we had conversations about potentially obstructing justice or defrauding the electoral count.
The testimony could pave the way for an investigation into whether Trump tried to obstruct or conspire against the government. On his social media platform, Truth Social, Trump expressed concern the testimony could undermine the relationship between future presidents and their White House counsel. Meanwhile, the committee's next hearing is Tuesday, July 12th at 10 a.m., followed by a primetime hearing next Thursday. The Treasury Department has been asked to investigate IRS audits of former FBI Director James Comey and former Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, who are both critics of President Trump. Several lawmakers said it's difficult to believe the audits were coincidental, but the IRS said it's untrue to suggest they were politically motivated. House Democrats are inviting the CEOs of three gun manufacturers to testify in a July 20th hearing in the wake of a mass shooting in Highland Park, Illinois. There's increasing pressure on lawmakers to do more on gun safety. However, the prospects for another deal appear unlikely. President Joe Biden honored late Senator John McCain with the Medal of Freedom, noting his close relationship with the Republican.
We ran against each other, which I didn't like, on tickets to the highest office in the land. I was the candidate for vice president. He was the candidate for president. I never stopped admiring John, never said a negative thing about him in my life, because I knew his honor, his courage, and his commitment. That was John McCain.
16 other recipients included gun violence survivor, former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, Olympic gymnast Simone Biles, and Sandra Lindsay, the first American to receive a COVID-19 vaccine. Boris Johnson stepped down as leader of Britain's Conservative Party on Thursday, but will remain prime minister until the party chooses a new leader.
I want you to know how sad I am to be giving up the best job in the world. But them's the breaks.
The resignation comes after dozens of his cabinet members quit, saying they could no longer serve under his leadership. In election news, Ballotpedia research shows there are 28% more contested primaries this year than in 2020. These are primaries with more candidates than available nominations. The number of Democratic primaries rose in 11 states and decreased in 15. On the Republican side, primaries increased in 27 states and decreased in 3. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Our independent radio station, KNSJ, was launched on the 4th of July, back in 2013. Since then, KNSJ has added new local and syndicated programs. Now, we're working to build our news and investigative journalism team to bring you the many important stories you won't hear anywhere else. Stories that impact you, your family, your community, and our nation. Independent, nonprofit, nonpartisan media has never been more important than today, when our very democracy is at risk. When our democracy is at risk. Please donate to support KNSJ News at www.knsj.org. That's www.knsj.org.
In the good old summertime, in the good old summertime, strolling through the shady lane with your baby mine. Her hand and she holds yours, and that's a very good sign that she's your tootsie wootsie in the good old summertime.
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. As temperatures climb, it's important to stay cool. Seniors and those without air conditioning are particularly vulnerable to heat-related illness. The county has provided a list of cool zones where you can beat the heat, including places in East County, such as libraries and senior centers. All are free and open to the public during designated hours. You can find a list of school zones in your area at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
Advocates for community health centers and their patients are speaking out against drug manufacturers that are trying to limit a federal low-cost drug program. The 340B program requires manufacturers to offer discounted drugs to pharmacies that contract with federally qualified health centers. But Liz Oseguera with the California Primary Care Association says drug companies are limiting sales to one contracted pharmacy per health center. This forces patients who can't travel to that single location to pay more at the neighborhood pharmacy.
Because of the limitations by manufacturers, patients are having to pay a lot more for those drugs. It could be hundreds more depending on the drug, and that could be happening monthly.
Drug companies Merck, Sanofi, and Eli Lilly did not immediately provide comment. But manufacturers have argued in the past that the program rules only require sales to one contract pharmacy per health center. They're demanding more transparency in the form of claims records from the health centers, which Oseguera calls a non-starter. 2 weeks ago, a lack of progress in this dispute led supporters to pull a California bill that would have required greater access to contract pharmacies. Under the 340B program, centers that operate their own pharmacy are required to reinvest any profit from the insurance payments into patient care. Oseguera says the loss of 340B revenue means some health centers may have to cut back on services.
With these fundings, we're able to pay for things that usually are not paid in Medi-Cal. That includes being able to hire community health workers or doulas, do maybe some home visits, all with the help of these 340B savings that we're not able to acquire otherwise.
The Federal Health Resources and Services Administration has sent letters to six drug companies, warning that the actions they're taking against contract pharmacies are illegal and threatening fines. Several companies have filed suit over this issue. The U.S. House passed a bill to strengthen the 340B program. A similar but more comprehensive version is expected soon in the Senate. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Hayden Parsley, on the road in Hacumba Hot Springs for East County Magazine. You can take a trip into California's past at the Desert View Tower, a quirky and whimsical relic of the past that is still open to the public here in San Diego's East County. Located just off Interstate 8 at the Incapa exit, the tower is poised on a rocky overlook surrounded by desert on all sides. Built in the 1920s by Bert Vaughn, a real estate tycoon who owned much of Hacumba, this 70-foot watchtower has become a tourist attraction and a local landmark on the outskirts of the small town known as Hacumba Hot Springs. Originally built to commemorate the area's rough pre-highway history, the tower houses a small museum filled with artifacts and oddities of California's history, including our region's Native American, Spanish, and pioneer past. The top floor of the tower is an observation deck, with a coin-fed telescope that provides a breathtaking view of Imperial Valley and the Anza-Borrego Desert, though now somewhat marred by a wind farm. In 1950, a gift shop was added around the base of the tower. The shop still operates today and is filled with an eclectic mix of items such as geodes, gems and minerals, vintage postcards, historic and travel books on our region, arts and crafts items such as handmade Tecate tiles, onyx bookends, musical instruments, carved animal sculptures, and more. Roaming this area of the tower are the owner's many friendly dogs that add to the rustic charm of the location. You can also get a workout pumping a player piano while listening to old-time tunes. While I was there, the wind was gusting. It was a bit chilly and I wished I had a better coat when I reached the top. The owner says this is atypical though and that it is warm and sunny most days. The proprietor, Ben Schultz, has many colorful stories on East County's history, culture, and colorful characters, having operated the site for many years. Boulder Park at the Desert View Tower was created in 1933 by an unemployed engineer, Merle Ratcliffe, who was out of work during the Great Depression. He sculpted reptiles and fanciful animals out of the huge stone boulders. I didn't get a chance to tour these, which will be an adventure for another time.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea. Public interest news for our region.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.